Richard Louv is a journalist and the author of 8 books about the connections between family, nature, and community. He has written for publications such as the New York Times and Washington Post, and was awarded the Audubon Medal by the National Audubon Society in 2008. The Californian visited Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art in Bentonville last month to discuss the importance of balancing a technological life with experiences in the natural world. I visited him with him there at the museum. In his book, The Nature Principle, Louv looked at human restoration and the end of nature deficit disorder. He coined the term nature deficit disorder as a tongue-in-cheek phrase for his book Last Child in the Woods, published in 2005. But he says the term has now entered the language, and people have decided they know what it is. Louv says the term is not a known medical diagnosis, though maybe it should be.
It is, though, a way to kind of capture this thing that has happened in the last few decades that many of us knew was happening, even if it was unconscious or subconscious that we knew it was happening. Something big was changing between children and nature. So this phrase kind of captures that. And before that, I think we didn't really have a phrase for it. We didn't have a way to talk about it. And that's one of the reasons why I think it caught on, is because people wanted to talk about it. They were already thinking about it.
Well, from things that I've seen and heard and read, people that don't get out into nature, children, I mean adults, it doesn't really matter, have high anxiety and maybe even anger issues. I mean, is that part of nature deficit?
It's always difficult to prove a negative. You know, if people aren't getting something, it's hard to prove that that's the cause for why they are a certain way. I always try to turn that around, as I did in both Last Child in the Woods and The Nature Principle, and say, here are the benefits of getting out into nature that we're only now beginning to learn. We've known this kind of intuitively for eons, but finally science has gotten around to asking, what is the role of nature in healthy child development and human development, in mental health and physical health? What is the role in creativity and cognitive skills, ability to learn? What's the role of nature in how well people get along together in a community? There's a long list of things that finally have been studied, and this is only the last 15 years or so. Before that, those questions were pretty much ignored by the academic world, but now, there's still a lot of research that needs to be done, but now they're beginning to ask those questions and finding huge benefits from just a little bit of time in the natural world for kids and adults. And then the next question is, what happens to a population that no longer has that contact?
Well, it's kind of crazy to me, you know, that we're even really having to have this conversation, because when I grew up, I mean, I was born in the early 80s, and it's just, you know, Nintendo was just coming out. And I spent quite a bit of time in the outdoors. I rode my bike. I don't know. It's just, I'm a bit of a traditionalist, I think. I don't like texting. I prefer to talk on the phone rather than, or in person, even. So I don't really know what my question is here. I guess I'm just sort of commenting that it's just kind of insane to me.
Well, it depends on where you are to an extent. But here, even here in the Ozarks, and I have a little personal history in the Ozark region because I grew up in Kansas City and my parents would come down to Bull Shoals and Table Rock, and actually lived on Table Rock, they did, for a little while. And I love this area of the country. What's happened really in the last three and a half, four decades is that this disconnection started slowly and it has been accelerating. And every year that goes by, there's more and more disconnection. There are recent studies done that have been published by the American Pediatrics Association and in the AMA Journal, et cetera, on the amount of computer use and texting and the number of hours that kids are spending plugged into some kind of electronic medium. It's growing exponentially every year. So what's happened is that it's crept up on us and it's accelerated. That's not to say, though, that there are not other trends. There has been a kind of movement that has been emerging in which Crystal Bridges is involved with to do what it takes to get kids outdoors and to get adults outdoors. There's a new movement in architecture called biophilic architecture, which rethinks our workplaces and where we live and work and play. Parks are really moving on this to try to get kids and families back outdoors because they've seen their attendance, many of them, plummet for about 15 years, the national parks. So they're very concerned about it. So there's a lot going on that actually could turn this around.
Well, and I know here in Northwest Arkansas, the cities and the municipalities are getting on board because we have the Razorback Greenway, you know, a trail system that's being built all the way from South Fayetteville up to Bella Vista, and I mean, in the trail surrounding where we sit at Crystal Bridges, you know, it's all part of that. You mentioned the amount of screen time, you know, and I think, was it 56 hours that you said?
54, I believe, was the last count, but that's several years ago. It may have gone up higher since then.
Well, there was actually a story on Morning Edition this morning. I guess that this week is screen-free week. You know, they're trying to promote families getting off of screens. And in that story, they said that kids under the age of 18 spend 7 hours and 38 minutes a day with a screen in front of them. And that was crazy to me. But then I realized that I'm sitting in my office and I have two computer screens and a cell phone next to me. And it doesn't seem that crazy anymore.
Yeah, and I'm the first to admit that I have a hard time getting away from my screens, too, my computers and iPhones, and I'm not anti-tech. And in the second book, in The Nature Principle, I have a phrase that I repeat a lot, which is that the more high-tech our lives become, the more nature we need. It's kind of an equation. You have to assume our lives are going to get more technological. But that doesn't mean that that nature's going to go away necessarily. What that means is we have to consciously increase the number of hours that we have contact with nature. What we've done is construct an environment in our schools and in our homes for our kids, for ourselves, in which we are spending more and more time expending a lot of energy blocking out most of those senses, including the ones we don't have. That, to me, is the very definition of being less alive. Now, what parent wants their child to be less alive? What teacher wants their students to be less alive? Who among us wants to be less alive? Some do, but I don't, and I don't think you do either.
No.
And that is what nature gives people. It re-enlivens them. It restores them. It restores their senses. All of that is linked to how well people learn, to their creativity, that's what these studies have shown, to their mental health. There's more studies on mental health than there is on physical health. All of this can be improved with more time in nature, not only, you know, in the mountains, but where we live, work, learn, and play, in our homes, in our backyards, in our schools.
How do you attain the perfect balance?
It's not easy. I mean, I have to say it's not easy for my wife or for me to do that. We go on what I call techno fasts. We do fasting, technology fasting, where we'll leave. We have to leave our house sometimes because there's so much work calling to us and so many screens. So we drive to the mountains and spend 4 or 5 days away from electronics, and I find I go through withdrawal on the way out of town. I start getting all anxious about all the emails that might come in and with problems I can't solve instantly as if I could. But by the time we leave town and get out in those mountains, that starts to lift. Once we're up there, my sleep pattern returns to normal. I have ideas.
I think a lot of people do that, you know, calling it like unplugged. You know, you're going to the beach for the week and, you know, you are unplugged for the week. I know that I do that too. Go to Eureka Springs and spend a weekend in a cabin and unplugged.
And so, you know, our schools need to think about that too. What we're doing with our schools often are loading more computers and more iPads and more technology onto these kids to the point where in not too many years, the thinking of many of the high-tech companies and education establishment itself is that the new school of the future will be immersed in technology. They're busy cutting recess, cutting back on field trips. there's not a lot of focus on getting kids outdoors. And yet we know from these studies, there's an unpublished study done by some of the same people who did research on attention deficit disorder at the University of Illinois. The research they did on attention deficit disorder found that the symptoms of that go down significantly, even kids as young as 5 years old, with just a little bit of contact with nature. They're studying kids in the projects of Chicago, a walk through trees in the woods, and those symptoms begin to go down. Simply greening our schools, getting kids outside more, having that natural play space, that garden, is the most cost-effective thing we can do to raise test scores, if we're serious about that.
Along the lines of schools, I did a story about 6 months ago on just internet in schools and technology in schools. And one of the teachers, you know, said, it's great. You know, we can see, I mean, actually, I think he mentioned the Louvre, you know, that students in Fayetteville, Arkansas, who would never get to go to the Louvre, you know, can see pictures through the internet. And I know that there's a line in your Last Child in the Woods, you know, that says, you know, something about nature being the portal to the world. And I think that some of these educators would argue that the internet is the portal to the world.
And I understand that. It's not an either or. Look, I love the internet. It makes my job a lot easier. But it's a different thing. I mean, when you're sitting in front of that screen with this feeling that you can go anywhere in the world through the internet, what happens to the rest of your senses? How many senses are you using when you're allegedly going anywhere in the world compared to what happens when you're outdoors in a natural setting? We need both. I mean, neurologically, we need both. There's nothing wrong in the internet. It's a matter of balance. And in fact, I know that many schools, and this is a good thing, I mean, this is one of the signs that we have the capability to find that balance when you hear more and more schools, this counter trend, which is more and more schools are having school gardens, are having greening the schoolyard and so forth. That so far is not the majority trend in terms of the dominant thinking in our public schools, but it's certainly there and it's growing, and that's a good thing.
Well, you mentioned that you have a tie to the Ozarks, and I know that this afternoon you spent some time walking around the grounds here at Crystal Bridges. May I just ask what your thoughts are on this, on the facilities here and the trails surrounding?
Well, I was told right away something I didn't know, which is Last Child in the Woods had something to do with the design of this place. The grounds around it, and it kind of melds into the philosophy of Crystal Grounds, but apparently Last Child really informed much of the design of the grounds, which I'm really flattered to find out. And I just walked through the grounds just the last couple hours, and it's just gorgeous. It's just beautiful. And it was actually Scott who from Crystal Bridges who took me around. He and I were practically on our hands and knees chasing skinks around on the like 2 10-year-olds. I was so excited to see skinks again because I grew up with them. Haven't seen them for a while. And it, you know, I think that one of the impressions that I get here is that it is a different vision of the future. One of the things I'm most concerned about now, and I speak about, or I talk about a lot in my speeches, and I write about in the Nature Principle. You know, Martin Luther King said that any culture, any movement, any culture will fail if it cannot paint a picture of a world that people will want to go to. And I think that Americans, in particular, have lost, in many ways, the ability to envision a great future, maybe a sustainable, survivable future. They can kind of see that. But what about a great future? Can they really see images of that? The number one genre of young adult fiction now is called dystopic fiction. It's about a post-apocalyptic world in which not even vampires are having a good time. Those are the dominant images now that I think most Americans carry around with them of the far future. Nothing wrong with dystopic fiction. Nothing wrong with being worried about bad things could happen. But what about the absence of a set of great positive images of how the future could be. You know, King's speech was not called "I Have a Nightmare." People could see the possibility in the future. Do we do that now? Do we have images in our mind of what a great city could be, a nature-rich city? So walking around today, I was thinking, what I'm seeing here are some images of a great future, of a nature-rich future. That's a great gift that this museum could give the rest of the world.
Richard Louvre is a journalist and the author of The Nature Principle and Last Child in the Woods. He spoke at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art last month. For more information on Mr. Louvre, visit richardlouvre.com. That's L-O-U-V.